Welcome to the official EFL podcast. This week, we have an EFL stalwart, the man who led Coventry City to the playoff final last season and has seen the Sky Blues into sixth place this campaign. It's the quite superb Mark Robbins.
The fan base is incredible. It's incredibly loyal, but incredibly supportive. And that has been a major factor. You can't do it. If you've got a disconnect, you just cannot do it because you're fighting against the elements. You've got no chance. You need everybody working together.
The wonderful Juliet Ferrington is back to co-host, and Colchester United's Danny Cowley attacks our 72 in 72. If you're floating your boat, then press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from so that you never ever miss an episode, or you can watch the whole thing on YouTube every week. Get ready. It's the official EFL podcast. Right, let's get stuck in. I was going to give a big, long spiel to Juliet Ferrington, but she got that last time. But anyway, Jules, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you very much. And seeing as though we kicked off the year so very well, I've got a treat for us today. I've got the longest-serving manager in the Championship, the man who took a certain team to the playoff final at the end of last season, and who currently sits sixth. And as is the time-honoured tradition with the way that this club's operated in the last couple of years, this is when they really do mean business. Mark Robbins, Coventry City manager, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Nice to see you both.
Good.
A pleasure to have you here, Mark. And it's nice to have a manager on so quickly after a performance and a result from the night before against Bristol City. What was your take on it?
Well, good point in the end. I think we didn't play as well as we have done of late, but I think I just really attribute that to the two games we've had on a difficult pitch at Sheffield Wednesday and the quick turnaround in games. I think there was some emotional baggage from that game came across with us to the game last night. Well documented. Shouldn't be, but it was. And just felt that we were a little bit flat. Things were a little bit flat. But sometimes happens in Championship football because the nature of it's relentless and, you know, everything's full on. You know, and really, you look at the calendar prior to, well, just coming into January, really, you look like at that point that we had 5 weeks where we just had the Saturday to Saturday games. Mm. That would change. So we end up with, I think, one free week where we can work on the training ground. But really, yesterday, prior to yesterday's game, I think if we get through against Sheffield Wednesday, 11 games in 43 days. So that's that's the nature of it. So sometimes you can be forgiven for having a little bit of a flat performance, or what can be sort of classed as a flat performance. But really, we were a goal up, conceded a really poor equaliser, conceded a second in about 84, 85 minutes, and then we sort of hit back immediately. So the point in the end was a good point.
I said at the top, as I introduced you, about being the longest-serving manager in the Championship by some way, of course, which is a feat in itself, to be in football management as long as you have. And when we listen to you post-match, pre-match, and Jules would have done this many a time, there's an element of being tremendously unruffled, of being walking up with the straightest bat you're ever going to get and knocking away daft questions. Not Jules' daft questions, other reporters' daft questions. But being able to kind of manage expectation, and we spoke quite a few times, didn't we, Mark, in the run-up to the playoff final, which is this huge, huge football match. And your approach never changed, and it never will change from the gist that I get and knowing you the little bit that I do. I don't think your approach will ever change, will it?
No, I don't think so. I think really there is emotion involved, 100%, and it's just how you try and manage. It's how I try and manage it. There's a lot goes on at football clubs. The club, Coventry City, it's a club that I've been at a long time, know it inside out. It's the second spell I've been there, and there's been so many ups and downs. Actually, now there's probably more ups than downs, which is testament to everybody and what we've done. I think my biggest achievement, really, apart from the obvious thing is promotions, but the sort of connection with the supporters and the players has been phenomenal. Really, I think that's been a big achievement, because when I first went in, there were pigs' heads being thrown onto the pitch, not literally the balls, tennis balls, pigs' heads, and it was toxic. And you know, that changed fairly quickly. We won the Checker Trade. It was the Checker Trade at that point, Papa John's Trophy, EFL Trophy. Within
I'll
about
give an
three,
update on the latest sponsorship with it.
I know. Three weeks after I'd been in, and the first three games, We lost, you know, I had three games in a week. The first week was Brantford City, we lost 2-0. We went to MK Dons, lost 1-0. And then we were at home to Southend in the middle of a week where we lost again. And the third game was Port Vale. And it was, funnily enough, it was just before Wembley. So everybody turned up and we won. But the game at Wembley was incredible as well. And he was just able to then just say, right, we'll just put the wood in the door, just stop the rot. Mm. And we can use that as a starting point, really. And that's what happened. But the first day I walked into the football club was like walking off the edge of a cliff. It was just about to fall off the edge of a cliff. Mm. And it just needed grabbing hold of and taking forward. And a big club like Coventry, if anybody had walked in that day and seen the way it was, they wouldn't have believed it. So, you know, big credit to everybody that's worked. And I've just spoken to Dave Boddy, because Dave Boddy's leaving today, the chief exec.
Okay.
Who's been on the journey with us for those 7 years. When I came in, he was working in the commercial department with Tyne and Scope. And I'd spoken to, with that first day, I'd asked for a meeting with the owner. And I went down to London to meet with her, and I said, I need a chief exec. And I didn't know Dave, really. I'd met him, but I didn't know him. I didn't know he'd been chief executive before at Worcester and Newport County. And he became the chief exec and a close ally and a friend. And I think that he leaves today, which is that poignant day, really, for everybody. But wish him all the best, whatever he decides to do next, because he's been a big part of what's happened.
Mark, I listened to a couple of interviews that you've done since you've been at Coventry, and you talk about the fact that no coaching badges can really set you up for what you experience. And when Prutz mentioned about the emotions and everything that's involved in football management, it's more experience that you learn from that makes you the person that you are.
I think, though, well, it makes the manager you are, that's for sure. I think your experiences shape you, don't they? And I think my first experience in football management was when I was at Rotherham, and was the youth team coach and reserve team coach. And Alan Nil was the manager who'd taken over from Mick Harford, who was there the year before. Mick unfortunately lost his job, then Nilly took over and lost his job, and they asked me to step in and take over, and there was a 10-point penalty just there. Yeah. And then on the back of that, the 10-point deduction, we were due to travel to Morecambe the day afterwards, and the players were all together. We were trying to work. The PFA wanted to come in and speak to the players immediately, which I allowed happen, although I didn't have any say on it. Clubs in administration. Administrators had been appointed, and the players were asked to sign wage deferrals at that point. So to try and then talk about tactics and how we're going to play, and travelling to Morecambe on the day from Rotherham, which is a long enough way anyway, we lost 5-1, and that was a baptism. And there were things that happened then where you've got a unit together who signed the waivers. They all signed it, apart from one. Went to see the one player that didn't sign it was the one with value. We'd paid money for him, and I went to see the administrator, and I just said to him, "You've got to pay me salary. Whatever happens, pay me salary. We'll look to sell him," which is what happened. So we brought some money in that way, but it kept everybody together. You can't have somebody go in a different route and keep and
no ruin the dressing together. Room.
Mm. Yeah, so I had to do that. I had no choice, and that was sort of a baptism. But that is something that is just doing what you think is right for the team and for the club, and that's how I've always managed the teams. Always manage the clubs. Every decision I've made, I've tried to make it into the best interest of the football club and the person involved.
Going off Jules's point there of you don't learn, the bits that you learn potentially on the grass wherever you do your coaching badges doesn't necessarily give you the full picture of what managerial life is like. Do you have younger managers coming to you now asking for advice and kind of saying, well, I've got this situation, and you can kind of just sit back and stretch around and say, sit down, this is what happens, this is how you get through it. Is there anyone that's tapping your ear for it?
People, when I speak to people, that they ask questions. If they're inquisitive enough, they want to learn. There's a new breed, isn't there, coming into the game where clubs are starting to move away from managers and go to head coaches and with sporting directors. But the biggest thing for me is not the setup. If it's right for the club, you know, if it's what they want to do, that's fine. It's just having that synergy between and that common ground between everybody and then moving forward in the same direction. Because as soon as you get somebody wanting with different ideas, and you've all got to be aligned. You know, there's no, as soon as you become misaligned, there's a major problem coming. So I think that's the biggest thing. But yeah, there's managers. I speak to managers and coaches all the time, and they do talk about, you know, what about this and what about that and what about football. But football clubs are totally different. They're totally unique. Well, and you can't go into one and do the same thing. There'll be different nuances and different ideas and different history with football clubs as well. So that does have an impact. I think with Coventry City, the fan base is incredible. It's incredibly loyal, but incredibly supportive. Mm-hmm. And that has been a major factor. You can't do it. If you've got a disconnect, you just cannot do it because you're fighting against the elements. You've got no chance. You need everybody working together.
You obviously have a good time at Coventry. You've been there for so long, and a great love and a great connection with the fans, as you've just spoken about, and the actual city and everything else that goes with the community. How does it make you feel? Not that I don't know how much attention you sort of look at elsewhere in the EFL and other football clubs. I just wondered if I could get your thoughts on managers who were given 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, 7 months, and they're out. It's like a revolving door at quite a lot of clubs.
Yeah. I think that first and foremost, you get different scenarios. But firstly, I've been involved in some, you know, where you go for an interview and the first thing you're asking, right, what do you want? What is it that you're after? What do you want as a football club? What are your aims? What are your ambitions? You know, what's the resource? You know, what's the training ground like? What's the stadium like? You know, the support? What's that? What's the chances of growing the club? You know, where can we get to? There's so many different questions around the whole thing. It's not just about the team. Yes, we've got some good players, but are they going to stay? You know, what's the contractual situation? Are we allowed to bring players in? What's your thoughts on that philosophy? And there are so many different elements to it, and that you've got to be aware of everything. And I think interview is a big, big starting point. Clubs need to be aware of what they're after, and a lot of them aren't. You know, they don't really know what they want, so they're led by somebody else, and then all of a sudden it becomes difficult, and then they start to go, I don't really like this, I'm going to make a change because I don't like it. So it's an emotional game. Sometimes there's emotional decisions made, and I think generally every decision that's made will be an emotional one at the end of it. Whether it's a positive or it's a negative, they'll make an emotional decision. I think it's how you get there. I mean, Jurgen Klopp, for instance, has done incredibly well. You know, he's gone into Liverpool. Not only has he stabilised it, he's built, and they've played a brilliant brand of football that people copy. You know, people look at them and they want to emulate what Liverpool have done and the way that they've gone about things, and the gegenpressing that's been brought in has obviously been copied by a lot of teams now. They did it in that way, and people start to look and try and emulate what other teams have done. I think, you know, ultimately, they have to have a clear philosophy and a clear vision, and then they can align that with the coach or the manager that they want, and then they talk on those terms. And if you're talking along those lines, then you can start to get a feel for the manager that you're employing. If you don't do that, then you're going to sort of still try and get to know your manager for a long period of time, and then you need to build the trust. And that's another thing as well, that's built over time as well. You know, what are they like? What's the recruitment department like? What type of player are you going to bring in? What's the philosophy there? You know, what's the profile of the players? Who are the people that are recruiting? What's the connection between the coach, manager, or whatever it is with the recruitment department and the ownership? You know, and then that's all aligned with the overall trajectory of the football club. I mean, we've got new ownership coming, and that changed from, we needed to try and get better incrementally every year, to we want playoffs 3 out of the next 5 years. You know, Matsy's come out with record to say that. That's fine, no problem. But we've got to still do that in a way that control. As soon as we come out of that control, and he'll do that by making sure that the cost, the overheads, the cost, the operating costs are within the rules. So that's what we have to do, but also he's got to understand what we're the playing field that we're in, you know, and this division this year I think is the hardest it's been, you know. I think in terms of the football, because that's getting better all the time. You're getting good coaches in, they make good decisions in game, So you've got to be ready for that and try and make those changes. There's so much involved in the pre-match stuff. Whilst you're still getting the games, you're still getting the frequency of the games, the training sort of still goes down. The age of your squad is relevant because then you've still got to work with a young squad. They still need to be reminded about the roles and responsibilities and what needs to happen in certain times of the game. When you get experienced, as you know, David, you start to become comfortable in your own skin. You understand the game. When things move, you adjust. Young players don't. You know, they're still learning. And that's one of the biggest things in terms of if you've got a young squad, that's why at times things and results start to go a little bit, especially in the Championship because of the nature of it. There's so many different nuances. There's so many different things that you've got to be on top of. And that's really where your experience comes in, Juliet.
I'm listening to this as me and Jules are peppering you with questions, and I'm thinking, how on earth have you been able to give us 20 minutes on this podcast? Because, I mean, where on earth do you get the time from? It's the day before deadline day. You played last night. The games are coming thick and fast. It's 25 hours a day. It's 8 days a week. It's non-stop, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's why I was late. So I've been on the phone. I was on the phone
signing
all day.
Come on.
I was just on the... No. I was just on the phone and I'm doing other bits. I've had to do an audit. The academy's been audited, so I've been on the phone for an hour with the auditors or on Zoom with them. And whilst that's happening, I'm getting text messages. I've got some more messages now coming through. It's non-stop. My wife's here. She's just come in. She's brought me my lunch. My lunch is in the dog now. So I've got no chance, but I could do with missing a meal or two. it just is what it is, and it's part of life. It's a way of life. If you don't like the way of life, you don't like it, then you need to get out of it.
So that's it then, Mark, really. You wouldn't have it any other way, no matter how many hours of the day that you need to do this job.
No, I can't have it any other way. It's all consuming. But I've got good people around me. That's why I need AD Vivash and Dennis Lawrence and Aled Williams, the good people, and the capable. So I can trust them 100%. I don't need to get totally involved in that. I don't need to design sessions anymore. I don't need to go, right, this we need, because I know that's getting done. It's just the way things have evolved over 7 years. And a lot of my job will change again now because we're starting to put things in place. There's a new performance director starting tomorrow. And she's called Claire Marie Roberts. She's coming in from the Premier League. She's worked for the Premier League for 10 years. So she'll help me in a number of areas, really, or us in a number of areas where she's got psychology and qualification, but a really in-depth one. She's got sports psychology, clinical psychology, something different. So that will be dealt with, but she'll be able to help me with that. She'll be able to do I want her to be able to manage the medical side of things, because initially I wanted head of performance medicine that came in to manage that side of things. She'll do that as well. She'll head that up. And what she'll essentially do is look for the 1% that we might be able to get and gain an advantage from, or where there's any gap, she will do a thorough process and she'll come back and report back and we'll look at trying to fill those gaps and trying to move it forward cost effectively.
I suppose that's the main thing, isn't it? Coming in cost effectively. Mark, I mean, you've given us so much of your time, mate, and I feel even worse now that you've not had your lunch. So what we're going to do is going to, like, I mean, there's so much more we could be chatting about. I mean, currently sixth spot, the last couple of seasons, mate, it's been an absolute pleasure having seen you at that Checkatrade final. 70,000 fans were in Wembley that day. Vast majority, of course, were Coventry City fans. And seeing the place grow and build and seeing that turnout at Wembley, of course, in May, and being just one spot kick away just shows just that kind of the sliding doors moment. But once again, Sky Blues are coming back at it, and I'm not betting against you finishing very, very high up in this particular division. So thanks for your time, mate. We wish you all the very best.
Very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Juliet.
Right,
thank you.
Mark Robins, fantastic there. Longest ever manager in the Championship. I'm going to say that every time I talk about him because it's true. Juliet, you can have a little rest because now, on the official EFL podcast, it's the 72 in 72, and this week it's Colchester United's Danny Cowley.
Hi everyone, I'm Danny Cowley, and this is my 72 in 72. Leicester City, Ipswich Town, Leeds United, West Bromwich Albion, Hull City, Coventry City, Stoke City, Huddersfield Town, Norwich City, gonna go into League One, Portsmouth, Derby, Bolton Wanderers, Stevenage, Fleetwood Town, Oxford United, Bristol Rovers, Bristol City. Let's go with Lincoln City, Northampton Town. Let's go into League Two. League Two, top of League Two, Mansfield, Wrexham, Notts County, Stockport County, Colchester United, of course, Harrogate Town, Forest Green Rovers, Sutton United, Grimsby Town, Newport County, Swansea City.
Danny Cowley there with a very, very respectable 30 on the 72 in 72. Matt Smith looks to be unassailable at the top, 38. I mean, he is universally known as A, the most nicest of footballers, or the nicest of footballers, to be grammatically correct, and also very brainy. So that really does fit. Richie Wellin second, and then Danny Cowley sat there in third. The top five rounded out by Pete Wilde and Wayne Rooney. Right, that was a very intriguing and eye-opening chat with Mark Robbins. It was just nice that he'd forsaken his lunch to chat to me and you, wasn't it?
Not enough hours in the day for Mark Robbins, I don't think.
You did, right, I've got, from the kind of my angle of being someone who ran around for a living for a bit and then moving on and then doing this, which is lovely and fun and relaxing, and then former peers and colleagues and teammates of mine that have gone into it, I've just got so much respect for them. Yeah, I mean, yes, there'd be an outsider looking at this going, well, they're not, but you know, I mean, it's not life or death, they're not curing this, not curing that. But when you listen to what the slate is each and every day, I mean, they played last night, got a draw against Bristol City. You could tell he was a bit unhappy about a couple of the goals. But then back to it today, there's his chief execs moving on, they're bringing a director of performance in. It's just so kind of hell for leather. And the fact that they sat sixth, and there was a really intriguing bit that you picked up on, Jules, wasn't it, with regards to where Coventry City see themselves within the Championship?
Yeah, and he talked about the targets that have been set and what he's been told, and it's playoffs. Hmm. It's playoffs. They've got to be up there. And the pressure, I guess, that puts on him. But then you have to admire him for the way that he's gone around and made sense of what happened at the end of last season, you know, just missing out on the Premier League, the turnover of players, new players coming in, still trying to get used to what they want them to do. Mm-hmm. But he's got them in the position that they're in, and they look on course, unbeaten. I know that they drop points against Bristol City, but they remain unbeaten, and that just keeps that momentum going. He just has such a love for the city, the club, the community. He is Mr. Coventry, isn't he? And I can't imagine him, longest serving manager there, I can't imagine him being anywhere else. He just seems to be the perfection. Mm. There you go, Mr. Perfect.
He does, doesn't he? Fits the club, fits the city, and fits the narrative, really. And I mean, the football that they played last season, coming into this season, the return of Callum O'Hare, obviously with Harmer and Victor Gyökeres moving on, shows just how good he is with these particular players. And speaking of good players, there was another game last night in the Championship, Leicester City. They won, they beat Swansea. Keenan Jusby Hall on the score sheet again. A penalty that you possibly class as marginally favourable. But another win. I suppose the question, Jules, is if between now and tomorrow, recording this on Wednesday, the transfer window closes tomorrow, it's absolutely imperative that Kieran and Jusby Hall, their talisman, is still there amid huge speculation from Brighton. And given Brighton's result against Luton, maybe that 30 million quid turns into 35, maybe 40.
Yeah, but maybe the price tag is there for a reason, in the sense that, do they really have to sell him at this moment in time? And do they want to sell him at this moment in time? When you look at Leicester and the huge advantage that they have at the top of the Championship, the top of the EFL, him being a key part of that. But also, you would think with this run and this momentum and where they are at the moment, that they will get a second chance of the Premier League coming up. And that's his boyhood club, and you assume that he would want to have another opportunity to play in the Premier League with Leicester City. So I can see why they've put that pr- price on him, because it would maybe say, because we don't know what's going to happen, it would maybe say that you're not, we're not going to be prepared to take anything less. And it kind of puts those other clubs who are interested, just sort of pushes them away for the time being. But also with Leicester, it's interesting because there is a group of fans who don't seem to like what they're seeing all the time. There has been criticism.
This is the one that was boxing my brain before. Talk me through it. Reason with me. Tell me why.
Well, I can't really reason with it. I can only tell you what that I'm hearing and what I'm seeing is that they think it's, you know, we all see teams and we all see performances that, you know, are a little boring sometimes. That's what happens with football. I don't get it. They've won 26 out of 34. What is there to be unhappy about? Mm-hmm.
But and obviously the other side of that is as well, a change in manager occurs, things don't happen well, and then you are in the Championship for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 seasons longer than you would hope to be. And financially, as we've seen, imperative that these big clubs with big wage bills, big turnovers, get relatively straight back into that. Obviously, the one outlier with that is Ipswich Town and how well they're doing. I'm going to cast our eyes a bit further down to the more squeaky bum end of the Championship. We saw QPR take on Huddersfield at the weekend, labelled before the game as a must win. That didn't become a must win for Huddersfield, even though it was a very late equaliser from QPR, which means that Darren Moore moves on. John Worthington, head of the academy there, steps in to take over as caretaker for the foreseeable. What did you make of the decision? What do you think comes next? And what's your thoughts in general on the way that Huddersfield's hierarchy are going about managing expectation at that end of the table?
There's been a constant change of management. There's been changes at board level as well. I actually thought Darren Moore would be a good fit, but he's only managed to survive there 4 months. Mm-hmm. Although the record wasn't great, only winning 3 in 23 games. So I suppose it didn't come as a shock. And maybe, you know, if you take it on performances and results, that would suggest that he did deserve to go in the end. But what I find he didn't deserve is just this online criticism, which we've touched on with Mark briefly, and we're seeing it's a constant now in our lives, social media. But it's the criticism of it, and the criticism of him, you know, it can be sort of, it's disrespectful, it can dehumanize, it can destroy, it can demean you as a person. So I don't believe that, I don't think at all that he deserved that. And I think that also, we also saw the external pressure from the fans, but we also got a glimpse into the internal pressure that he was under as well. You know, when the club chairman gets involved by saying it's a must-win game, and against Queen's Park Rangers, it was almost, he almost got those 3 points had it not been for that late equaliser. And ultimately, when you see that pressure and it's made public, then it was obvious what was going to happen after that performance and result at the weekend.
Intrigued to see who's going to go in there. There's a lot of decent managers that are floating around potentially to take up. I think early front runners, Paul Heckingbottom, Gary Rowett. It's almost getting to the stage of early Feb, a bit later on in Feb, when someone like Neil Warnock would fit.
But we saw that last season, going back again
to once again save the club and do the Great Escape.
I did a game at Huddersfield last season, and when he was there, and I can't remember what game it was, but he'd won it by in only a way that Neil Warnock could, and obviously that led to them, that particular result led to them staying up. But on that particular day, the playlist was all 90s music, and I was sort of speaking to the press guy going, wow, we're rewinding here, like taking me back, where's this all come from? And it was from his time when he was manager there first time around. They put together, it was an absolute banging playlist, and it obviously did the trick. But he had the opportunity to stay, which he did, and he didn't. So maybe he could foresee what was coming.
Intriguing to see if any of those players actually had heard the songs that were on his playlist, given the fact that they're all really young now. And it still blows my mind, you're talking to people that were born either in the late 90s or in this particular century, which makes me feel very old, Jules.
They probably didn't even know any of the tracks.
It's like when you're a kid and you're watching your parents boogieing down, you go, this is horrible. I can never unsee this. Right, that's the bottom end of the Championship. intrigued to see what happens with that, and wish John Worthington, of course, all the best in this interim period. Big game against Sheffield Wednesday. Pompey won at the weekend. They're top of League One, 3 points clear of Bolton. Bolton, though, have 3 games in hand, which makes that even more intriguing. We do have to reflect on the Pompey game, because there's something that happened in it, which at the weekend is something that sometimes when you're sat, George, trying to make sense of the utterly nonsensical, you've got to park it and then just realise that people that do this type of thing don't deserve to be anywhere near a football pitch, do they?
It's clear in any stadium or any ground you go to, you do not invade the pitch. Now, people probably think of pitch invasions and think, oh, it's a massive big group of people, which we've seen at Reading. We've seen at lots of different grounds. I only mentioned Reading because that happened recently through fans protesting. But for one person to think it's okay to go and run onto a pitch and chase the match official who is in charge of everything that goes on in that stadium at that particular time because of a decision that the fan didn't particularly like. And I don't know what prompts people to do this. And some people in the stands may think it's funny. Some people on social media may look at it and think, oh my goodness, have you seen what happened at Vale Park today? Mm. But actually, there's a safety reason. There's a safety concern. Mm-hmm. There are these rules are in place for a reason. But also, I don't know who that person was or who that person is, but that person, his employers will see it. His family will see it.
Correct.
His friends will see it. And now whatever punishment is going to be given to him for doing it, then it says every chance he's not going to be able to enter a stadium or a football ground for quite some years to come just because he thought it was okay to go and chase the match official and try and get him to speak to him about a decision that he wasn't particularly happy about.
Yeah, I mean, situations like this are critical in the sense of hopefully rowing back from the precipice of just officiating being the most impossible job within professional football, because it's like you say, it's fodder to talk about. Decisions are poured over, pulled apart, ridiculed, high-fived, and it does nobody any good, because fundamentally, without them, the game's knackered. If you're in a position where the referees aren't refereeing anymore, then it stops the game completely in its tracks. But everything that you said there, Jules, I can't disagree with. Let's go on to something slightly lighter. At time of recording last week, we just heard that Paul Hurst had got the Shrewsbury Town job, and Paul Hurst and Shrewsbury Town fit together really, really well. If you're a Shrews fan, are you thinking that the good times are about to return?
Well, the good times did come back if you are a Shrewsbury Town fan, because he won his first game. Must have had some good training time with the players, because he wouldn't have had a whole full week to work with them. But you just feel with Paul that it's unfinished business because of the manner in which he left the last time he was at Shrewsbury. He brought some form of success to the club. He had a good time there. Matt Taylor, another manager who was only given a handful of months to try and do things. He only ever wanted the best for that club, and you could tell that with the way that he dealt with the media, and he spoke about the club and the players, and you know, he had players out injured, and it's tough finances at Shrewsbury. But he's a guy, Paul Hurst, who knows the town, who knows the club, who knows what it can do. And obviously the players have responded to that as well, because they put in that performance and they scored goals too, which also helps. And the fans seem to be happy. And, you know, there were a few fans that were disgruntled with the way that Paul Hurst left the last time. But it's only a handful. And I'm sure that, you know, he'll have them back on side within the near future.
Let's move into League Two. Speaking of that particular division, Wrexham currently sits second. Stockport, of course, emphatic as ever. Mansfield third. Barrow fourth. Crewe fifth. MK Dons in sixth. Mike Williamson doing a terrific job since coming over from Gateshead. When you're in a position as an ex-player, where a player that was in the youth team of a football club that you were in is now a manager and doing really, really, really well. He was there at Southampton. Absolutely blows my mind. Makes me feel very old. But new managers rocking in at Notts County. Luke Williams, of course, tremendous job, tremendous footballing job, if you are a purist. Going back to Mark Robbins talking about philosophy and speaking to younger managers. He's obviously since moved on. Swansea, tricky start for them. Obviously work for him to do. But Stuart Maynard is the man to take the Magpies forward. Wealdstone is on his CV. But also the first properly full-time managerial job that he's had is this. No pressure then.
No pressure, but and also he came in after that tremendous 10-goal thriller against Grimsby, 5-5. Wow, I still can't get over that one.
Amazing, Dan. Amazing.
Crazy. They've got Mansfield this weekend, haven't they? But yeah, Wealdstone. So he hasn't sort of had that professional management job before full-time, but also he comes with a really good track record, a really good reputation. For what he did at Wealdstone. I think Notts County might have played Wealdstone last season, and he said some really good words about Notts County, about the club as well. So the fans seem to have backed him. He's possession-based football. That will suit the players at Notts County that he's inherited and got. So they won't have to do much different on the pitch from what they have been used to. So it does seem to be and feel a really strong appointment for them, and hopefully they can continue and he can continue that momentum that they had built before Luke left for the South Wales and Swansea. So also, but the fact that I thought was quite interesting is that because it's his first professional, first job in professional football, that, you know, that will be a motivation for him as well. So that could also push the team on, but we'll see how it goes.
Elsewhere, there's a man that has very definitely not just got his first job in professional football. He's been around a very long time. And I mean that with real warmth and empathy, because whenever I've worked with this particular fellow, he's been wonderful. Always has a lot of time for you in and around games, sends the longest WhatsApp and text messages with the most infinite amount of detail on, which is wonderful and muchly appreciated for my very small brain. Let's talk about Forest Green, because they've changed tack. They went for someone that they thought might be the bright young thing to try and take them in one direction. That didn't work. But Steve Cotterill comes back into the fold. I think it's great.
That'll suit him, won't it? I think it'll suit him. I think it'll be a good appointment for him and a good appointment for Forest Green. He's never been relegated. I think I've got this one right as well. I don't think he's ever been relegated as a manager. But what he does do, double check that. What he does do.
I've got 10 fate, basically. Is,
don't take my word for it. What he does do is he kind of rebuilds and any disconnect that was there before. And I think there's been quite a lot of disconnect at Forest Green with the fans, at the club and the players. So he's very good at doing that. He's very good at taking pressure off players. So he will protect them a little bit, like we talked about Carl Robinson at Salford when he went in just a couple of weeks ago. So he's very good at that. He's very calm, as you mentioned. I think Forest Green will be all right with Steve Cotterill in charge. I just think he has that experience. He deals with pressure well. And he'll motivate the players, but also that he was good. And I go back to Shrewsbury, but he was really good for Shrewsbury when Shrewsbury needed somebody like that. And they had a couple of good seasons there. So I think that will work out well. I think he's just calm. I think he's experienced, and he knows how to deal. He knows how to deal with things, situations,
Players,
media. Pressure players.
And I think as well, I mean, he's got a cracking sense of humour. I think it wasn't lost on him when he was unfortunately spending a lot of time in hospital with COVID, how well Shrewsbury Town were doing. I think
that was while he was there. They did really well while he was out of, you know, when he was away. But obviously he's fully recovered from that now. Which is great. And it didn't, you know, it ended at Shrewsbury. And now he's had an opportunity now to try and do something good at Forest Green Rovers.
Well, one of the good guys is back. We wish him all the best. Jules, this has been a pleasure. Last time we spoke, you had a free weekend. I sincerely hope that's not the case. You can't have too many of those.
Hair's been done today. Can you not tell?
That's how I was going to finish.
That's what it was this morning.
See, you've done your hair. I've had mine laughingly cut by someone who's going to go and finish it off in a bit. But no, nice.
I don't know
very
what they
nice.
Put. Yeah, you need the top bit. Kind of looks a little bit
out of proportion.
It looks naked behind the
Does
ears.
It? Okay, on that bombshell, I'm going to let you go. Juliet Farrington, a pleasure and lovely to see you.
See you again soon.
Always nice, of course, to finish on her chat. My thanks to Juliet, to the marvellous Mark Robbins, and of course to Danny Cowley. Please do give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts, or watch it all on YouTube. My name is David Prutton, and I'll see you same time next week for another episode of this, the official EFL podcast.